Hello everyone and welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Brandon and today we begin our adventure article. We are on page 36, so if you have your magazines, go ahead and open them up. And I have two panelists here with me today. Welcome Pam and Carolyn.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brandon.
And are you ready for an adventure?
I'm ready.
Yes.
Now, listeners, you might be wondering why we are talking about hiking the Himalayas, because as we know, earlier this year, there was a tragedy there, right? There was an earthquake, a 7.8 magnitude earthquake there, and of course, the area was devastated. And so it's not really possible to do many of the trails there in the Himalayas. Of course, we're looking at past experiences here. And we hope that those trails will be cleared away and people will be able to hike again sometime in the future, right? And so we are aware that right now it's not possible, but there's a lot of good vocabulary here. And we hope that we can look forward to many more hikes. Maybe not us, but other people, maybe some of the listeners. Pam or Carolyn, would you be interested in going on a hike in the Himalayas?
I would be interested in going to see the Himalayas. These people train, I think some of them train for years and years. We're talking about very high altitudes, very, very tall mountain peaks. And so they're in great shape when they set out to climb and reach the top of these mountains. Not only that, Brandon, it's very expensive.
That's right. It is very, very expensive. And it's will be expensive to fix all the trails, right?
Yes, definitely. But I think going to the Himalayas themselves would just be a beautiful experience, to see the magnitude of these mountains, because they're much larger than mountains that I have seen in person.
That's true. Yes, sometimes the mountains we see are more like hills, I guess, right, compared to these mountains. And, of course, there's a very famous mountain in this mountain range, right?
We're talking about Mount Everest.
Yes.
We'll learn more about the mountain as we get into the article. But I completely agree with Carolyn. We can go. I love to travel. And we can go just to see beautiful scenery and not necessarily have to do the riskiest thing that maybe some of the others are doing. But our story today is actually written by Stacia Glenn with the News Tribune out of Washington. She's writing and telling us about her trip.
That's right.
And some of her memories and why it made such an impression on her to be there.
Yes, there's a lot involved here. It's not just the beauty, although that's important and that's wonderful. It's also about her experiences, what she learned from the people. And I think she mentions that on every hike, she's changed. And I think that's an important part of this article as well. And so we have a lot to talk about. This is a 3-day article, and it's an adventure article. So listeners, I hope you are very excited about this particular topic. And right now we are on page 36. We'll have our first reading for today.
Experiencing the Himalayas. Simple moments amid Himalaya mountains leave lasting memories. There were too many moments. Moments that took our breath away, literally and figuratively. Moments where we were rendered speechless by the majestic Himalaya mountains and the incomprehensible warmth of the Sherpa people. Moments where we felt the exhilaration of accomplishment, crushing exhaustion and gratitude. We flew nearly 7,000 miles to Nepal for a chance to see the Himalayas in all their grandeur, scale a few high peaks, bond with friends, and experience a foreign culture. The plan was to spend 3 weeks trekking on the Everest Base Camp Circuit, summiting 20,000-foot mountains and an 18,000-foot peak. We would walk for hours every day, slowly, so we could properly acclimate and sleep in tea houses as we wound our way higher. By the end of the trip, we'd hiked nearly 100 miles and climbed about 34,000 feet.
Well, we start off talking about moments. And as we think about our own lives, we have lots of moments that we could share with other people. And we can learn from our own lives, of course, what's going on, what has happened, but we can learn from the lives of other people. And it's important to stop and reflect about that, isn't it, Carolyn?
Yes, it definitely is. There are a lot of times in our lives where we have a really wonderful experience and we want to remember that moment, and we can share that moment with other people later on.
Sometimes I think we're too busy to stop and reflect, aren't we, Pam?
I think, you know, most of us are very busy in this world today. We're always connected through our devices, mm-hmm. through our cell phones. And I think it's good. We really do need to just sit back sometimes, appreciate the moment that we're in. And that's basically what she was doing. When she starts her first sentence, she said there were too many moments where in the Himalayas from her trip.
That's right. And she goes on to say, moments that took our breath away. So she's not alone, of course. She's not hiking there in the Himalayas by herself. There's a team. And it says it took our breath away. If something takes your breath away, it sounds like a bad thing. We need to breathe, Carolyn, but it's not
yes.
a bad thing, is it?
We do need to breathe, but if something takes your breath away, then it's usually a good thing or something that is surprising to you, something you don't expect.
That's
so
right.
Maybe you see something very beautiful, like a view from the top of a mountain in the Himalayas, and that could take your breath away because you are just awestruck by the beauty.
That's right, and sometimes we use the word breathtaking, and it's the same idea, right? It just takes your breath away, it's beautiful, maybe a breathtaking view, and it just is so beautiful, it just seems like it takes your breath away. All right, well, we move on, and we see that literally and figuratively, she says. So moments that took her breath away literally because she's hiking, right? So that
right.
tends to take her breath away.
It's true, Brandon. As if you've ever done much hiking, you know, as you go higher, as you climb, the air is thinner. Is that right? It's a little harder to breathe if you reach very high altitudes. So here she's saying it literally took my breath away, but figuratively as well. And when we use that expression, we just mean it didn't really happen. I didn't really have to stop breathing, but she's using it to describe something.
Right, she's talking about because it's so beautiful, and that's what Carolyn was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
When we usually use this phrase in this way, we're talking about something is very beautiful or something is very good. So, we often talk about hiking or climbing, and I want to talk about that for a moment because we can go on a short hike. I can go out for an hour for a hike, but here we're really talking more about mountain climbing, aren't we, Carolyn?
Yes, and for mountain climbing, you need more than a good pair of boots
yes.
and maybe a jacket. You need special tools, and we'll read about some of the tools that she used during her trip later, because these mountains aren't covered in green trees, they're covered in ice and snow,
yes.
so you need even more specialized equipment
right.
to get through this difficult terrain.
Well, as you look at the photo there, you can see that they have nice coats on or jackets, and then, you know, they have gear that they're using there. It's not just like you're going for a hike
mm-hmm.
for an hour, right? It's very different. It's not for the faint-hearted. It takes a lot of effort. Well, as we move on, it says moments where we were rendered speechless, Pam. What does that mean?
If you are rendered something, it's a good verb. If you're rendered something, it just means it causes you to be in a particular state. So in this case, these moments, the scenery and everything that she was experiencing caused her to be speechless.
She did not know what to say. Everything was so beautiful. She just was there to take in the moment. Okay, and then she describes the mountains. She says the majestic Himalaya mountains and the incomprehensible warmth, Carolyn. It's a big word, incomprehensible.
It is, incomprehensible warmth. So if something is incomprehensible, that means it's very difficult to understand. And warmth here does not actually mean that something is warm as in temperature. This is a feeling between people, a feeling of welcomeness.
Yes.
Of friendliness. And so here she's talking about just how amazing it was to meet the Sherpa people and how friendly and welcoming they were to their guests.
Okay. And when we're talking about the Himalaya mountains, we often will talk about Sherpas, okay? And as we see here, the Sherpa people, they are part of a Sherpa is a person who is part of the Himalayan people, and they are skilled mountain climbers. That's very important because it's difficult to climb these mountains, so they help you, right?
Mm-hmm.
They will help people as they go out and climb. And then we continue to talk about moments. What do we learn next, Pam?
She said there were moments where they together felt exhilaration. That's another hard word, exhilaration of accomplishment. In other words, they were so excited because they felt like they accomplished something. And then crushing exhaustion. They were just, we might say, totally wiped out. They had no energy left, and gratitude at the end, appreciation.
So there was a lot going on here, all right? And I like that idea of the exhilaration of accomplishment. You know, a few months ago, I ran in a half marathon, and I've probably mentioned that about 100 times already. But it comes out here because I felt like that was an accomplishment. I had never done anything like that, and so I can relate to this. You're excited that you accomplished something. And so if you're able to go and hike Mount Everest, that's a huge accomplishment.
Right.
And so you would be excited about that, but it would be exhausting. It takes many, many days, and you'd be very tired, right? Well, next we go on and we learn that they flew nearly 7,000 miles to Nepal. Now, we see a map there on page 37. You see where Nepal is located. It's near China. It's in between China and India. And so they flew to Nepal for a chance to see the Himalayas. And then we see that they use a term here to describe the Himalayas, Carol.
Yes, in all their grandeur. And this is a really great word to describe something that is both large and beautiful. So a mountain we would describe as having grandeur if you think that the mountain is something beautiful to look at.
And you see the word grand there, and that kind of gives you a clue to the meaning of the word, the idea of being something being big, and of course beauty is involved there as well. And then they talk about scaling a few high peaks, and scaling here is not talking about weighing yourself,
that's
is
right.
It, Pam?
No, absolutely not. They're talking about climbing. To scale something means to climb it.
She uses a verb here. Right?
She uses it as a verb. So, of course, they're going to climb these mountains. But I love that she said they were also there to experience the culture.
Yeah, to bond with friends. Relationships are very important in life.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're there to bond, meaning to have those relationships, to create relationships, and to maybe work on relationships and just meet people and so forth. If you say, you know, you went out with a friend and you really bonded, maybe you met someone for the first time and you went out for a while and you seemed to really bond, that means you were really close together. You became very close very quickly, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. All right, so the plan, what was the plan, Carolyn?
Well, the plan was to spend 3 weeks trekking on the Everest Base Camp circuit. So they were going to trek, which means they were going to hike, they were going to climb, they were going to go through the Everest Base Camp circuit.
Okay, and a base camp is simply the place where they have food and supplies. When you are hiking, they have base camps, and so it's important to have those supplies. And so they were there at the Everest Base Camp, and they talk about the word circuit here. And so that is meaning the regular pattern. And so many people go on this trail, the Everest Base Camp trail, and it takes many days, but it's a popular trail that people go on. And then we see the word summiting, meaning they're climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're climbing to the summit, which is the highest part of the mountain.
That's right.
Right.
So you used it there, Brandon, as a verb and a
That's
noun.
Right.
So they are summiting or climbing 20,000-foot mountains and an 18,000-foot peak.
Wow.
No wonder it takes days and days.
That is intense, I have to say. You have to really get ready and prepare and train for that, right? Well, we would walk for hours every day, she says, slowly. So they're not going up. They're not running up the mountain. You can't do that. It's covered in ice, right, Carolyn?
Yeah, that would be very dangerous. You could very easily slip and fall and get hurt. And they're also trying to properly acclimate because they're so high up. As Pam mentioned earlier, it's more difficult to breathe at higher altitudes, so the air is getting thinner, the oxygen is less, and they need to allow their bodies time to adjust.
Right, and that's what it means to acclimate, to adjust, to change. And even if you for example, move to a different country, you need to acclimate to the culture. You need to get used to it, which we can all attest to that, right?
That's right.
We had to adjust after we moved here to Asia. And, of course, Pam is here. She visits us every year, and she is also based in the U.S. now.
That's right.
But you had to acclimate when you moved here to Asia for the first time, right?
It's true. And then I had to re-acclimate when I moved back to the States after being in Asia for 15 years.
Yes. And Pam and I happen to be from the same state.
We
in
are.
The United States, from
it's
the state
of
Tennessee. It is. And Carolyn's from West Virginia. Virginia.
Yes.
So we're all from the southern part of the United States.
Right.
Kind of interesting. Okay, well, so they had to get used to the climate and so forth, and they slept in tea houses. And we see that they were going up higher and higher. So when you're on these kind of climbs, you really have to, you know, go slowly and take time for rest and sleep at some point, right? Because you're there for days. Now, Carolyn, I believe you have been on a kind of strenuous hike or climb. Is that true?
Well, it wasn't too strenuous. Okay. Nothing like going on Mount Everest, but I did go to Alishan last year, and they do have some challenging hikes
mm-hmm.
that aren't simply paved paths that you can take. Although, depending on weather, those hiking trails may be closed
okay.
because they can be dangerous if it's been raining.
Did you climb up high enough to see snow?
No, we didn't
okay.
get quite that high. And we went in the middle of summer,
oh, okay.
so there wasn't any snow.
Oh.
But the temperatures were very cool at night.
Mm.
During the day, it was very hot, but at night, it was quite cold.
Like a desert.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, we see here by the end of the trip, she says we'd hiked nearly 100 miles and climbed about 34,000 feet. So they kind of jump to the end already right here just to give you an overview of what went on, right?
That's right. We'll see in the next reading, though, she'll go back and right. she'll talk about some of those special moments and the special people. So we're not at the end,
That's
never
right.
fear.
Sometimes in writing, they jump around, right?
Mm-hmm.
It makes it more creative. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different style. Well, speaking of different, what about a different land? Let's find out about that in our next reading for today.
A different land. There was a whirlwind of tourist stops before our guide, Nima Gyaljan Sherpa, drove us to the domestic airport for our flight into the mountains. We eventually piled into a 15-seat plane pointed toward the world's most dangerous runway, a 65 by 1,500-foot strip of asphalt atop a 9,100-foot cliff. No safety message was broadcast. A flight attendant handed out hard caramels and cotton to use as earplugs, and we were off. We shoved our faces against the dirty windows and snapped pictures. It was immediately apparent we were in a different land. Barefoot porters crowded arriving visitors hoping for work. There were no cars. The dusty walkways were crowded with yaks who paid no mind to people in their path. Quaint tea houses and stores were set against a lush backdrop and towering snow-capped peaks. Trekkers crossed suspension bridges. Mule trains held up pedestrian traffic. Barren rooms cost $2, and menus offered the same few dishes, but with different spices. The word simple leaped out of the landscape and the Sherpa lifestyle.
Okay, so we see here that there was a whirlwind of tourists, and you can expect that in this sort of area of the world. A lot of tourists want to go and hike Mount Everest. They want to go to the Himalayas. But when we talk about a whirlwind of something, Carolyn, what's going on there?
Well, it means that there's a large amount of something, or there's a lot of activity, and things are moving very, very quickly. So a whirlwind of tourist stops here means that she can barely remember the places that they went to because they went there so quickly and spent so little time at each place
yes.
that, oh, it was just a whirlwind. It was like the wind just going yes. very, very quickly around her.
I have a question for you, Carolyn. Why didn't she just say there were a lot of tourist stops? Why did she use a word like whirlwind, do you think?
Well, if you say just there were a lot of tourist stops, that's not very interesting. Mm. It doesn't really give you a feeling of what she experienced.
Yes.
Whereas by using whirlwind, it's much more descriptive.
Yes.
You can get a much better feel of what she was going through as she went to all these different places.
So that's good in writing, right?
Mm-hmm.
We may not say that in conversation,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's good in writing to use some descriptive words. And so you can try that out, listeners, but you have to be careful. You have to really know what it means. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
we might want to try that and it may not be quite correct. So you might want to branch out sometimes and try some different things, especially when it comes to writing. But in conversation, we'd probably just say there were a lot of people there,
right.
A lot of tourist stops, right?
A lot of tourist stops, that's right.
Okay, so there are a lot of people there, a lot of stops, rather. And then we meet the guide, who is the Sherpa. His name is Nima. And he drove them to the domestic airport. Now, I want to talk about that. We see domestic airports and international airports. What's the difference, Pam?
The domestic airport will always be, or usually will be, a smaller mm-hmm. local airport. And this will be because it is smaller, because of its size. You can't have huge jets
yes.
flying in. There's not a space for them
right.
to land. And so you'll have smaller planes, and we're about to find out they actually board a very small plane.
That's right. And the word domestic is referring to a particular, within a particular country. So if you're going to a domestic airport, the flights will fly to other places within that country. If it's international, of course, they'll be flying outside of the country, as well as within the country. So they are driving to the domestic airport for our flight into the mountains. And it gets really exciting here because they pile onto a 15-seat plane. It's really small, and they're going to the world's most dangerous runway, Carolyn.
Yes, this is a small, small plane, probably not as comfortable as the huge jet that they would have taken for their international flight. And this runway is 65 by 1,500 feet.
Mm.
So it is not very long or very wide, and it is just a strip of asphalt. Oh,
right.
My.
And the asphalt is just pavement. We have
mm-hmm.
asphalt on the streets. And it's atop a 9,100-foot cliff. That's why it's the world's most dangerous runway.
Right.
And you see a picture of it there, actually, on page 37, where we see the caption, a plane landing at the dangerous Lukla Airport. And so I saw videos of this, and I was reading some about it, and it sounds like a really scary experience.
Wow. So you would have a thrill ride, kind of like on a roller coaster, before you ever get to the mountain and begin your climb.
That's right. So there are just experiences to be had. Many, many moments. Many,
oh
many moments to experience. Okay, well, what do they do while they're on the flight, Pam?
This was so interesting, and we were even talking about it off air. The flight attendant, there's no safety message, no time for that. But they hand out hard caramel. You may hear some people say caramel.
Right.
It's
yeah.
pronounced both ways. But they handed out these candies and cotton to use as earplugs. So we're thinking the caramel was to put in their mouths
yeah.
and not their ears.
It
right?
almost sounds like they're putting the caramel in their ears with the cotton, right?
Mm-hmm.
The way the sentence is written. But caramel candy is made for eating.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For chewing.
So they were probably sucking on these to help with their ears
right.
because in such a small plane, it won't be pressurized the way a giant plane would be for an international flight. And they need the cotton in their ears because
yes.
I'm sure it's very noisy,
yes.
right, in this tiny, tiny plane.
And then they shoved their faces against the dirty windows and they snapped some pictures. They took some pictures. I'm sure they got some great pictures there. And then it was immediately apparent we were in a different land. That's why you saw the subtitle there, A Different Land. And so they're in a foreign country. It's different. They've come from America and they've come over to Nepal, and it's very different. And then as we move on to the top of page 37, we meet barefoot porters.
Right, porters. You can see porters on trains. Here, the porters are greeting the visitors because they want work. And these are people who will offer to carry your bags or your equipment for probably a very small fee.
And so they're crowding people. They're hoping that people will hire them. Mm-hmm. And were there any cars?
Well, there were no cars, but there were a lot of yaks.
Okay. Yaks? What's a yak?
If we look under our specialized terms, we can see that it's actually a type of cattle, but they have very long hair. Our listeners have probably seen pictures.
We actually see a photo there on page 39,
Pam. Oh, there it is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. They look very interesting. You know, they look to me totally different than a cow.
Yes, quite different. Okay, and so there were some dusty walkways, and they were crowded with yaks, who paid no mind. They're used to all the people. And then we learn about quaint tea houses, Caroline.
Yes. So if something is quaint, then it's very attractive because it's a little different. And maybe it's old-fashioned. Maybe it's very small.
Yes.
And so these tea houses are described as quaint. They're not described as being immaculate, something that's very clean or very beautiful or sparkling. But they're charming. They're quaint.
And then we learn about the backdrop, a lush backdrop and towering snow-capped peaks. We see that word lush again. We've had that, I think, two or three times this month. And so, of course, we talk about something being lush. We're talking about the plants and so forth, right?
Usually greenery, you know. And then we see that the trekkers or the hikers are going on. They have to cross these suspension bridges. Again, look at your terms. It's just a bridge that's supported by these strong steel ropes. And they had to cross that to get to where they were going.
So this article is very descriptive. We're getting lots of details. They move on to say, talk about mule trains, and that's, I guess, a lot of mules lined up together, right? You think of a train?
Yeah. So it's not a locomotive train with an engine that's carrying mules. It is a line of mules that are all together.
And they held up traffic, the pedestrian traffic, of course. There are no cars, just people. And then we talk about the rooms. They're barren, they're empty, but they only cost $2, right? And we see that menus, they offer the same few dishes at the different places, and maybe they just put in some different spices. And then we end day one with the sentence, the word simple leaped out of the landscape and the Sherpa lifestyle. And we definitely see that it is very simple, but we are going to learn a lot from these people. The writer is going to share a lot with us. And we have much more to talk about. We are out of time, unfortunately, for today. We hope you will join us again tomorrow for day two of our adventure article. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.